Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
All right, our question for today, Pastor Mungalu, is can a Christian be pro-choice and still follow Christ?
Oh yeah, come again, can the Christian...
Can a Christian be pro-choice and still follow Christ?
Oh yeah, so help me to understand the question. What is the person asking, trying to find out so that...
So in discourse, in social discourse, there are people who fall pregnant, and in the world in which we live, once a woman falls pregnant, there is a debate whether the woman should be given the choice to terminate the child or to maintain, retain, and keep the pregnancy. There are those people who say, no, a woman should not be given a choice whether to stay pregnant or terminate the pregnancy. If you fall pregnant, if you become pregnant, you must keep the life. You must maintain and protect that life that is inside of you. Now, in the world of discourse, there are two choices, or there are two sides in this debate. There are those who are pro-choice, and pro-choice means you can choose to terminate the pregnancy or keep the pregnancy. The choice is yours, hence the term pro-choice. And then on the other side of the debate, there are those who identify themselves as pro-life. And that means once you fall pregnant, you become pregnant, life is more important than your choice. You have made the choice to make life. Now you must protect and preserve that life. So those two camps are camps debating the issue of termination of pregnancy. On one side, it's pro-life people who say you don't have a choice. You made a baby. Stay with it. Raise that baby. That's your child. That's a life. They are pro-life. On the other side, there are those who are pro-choice, who say they should be given the choice to keep the pregnancy or terminate the pregnancy. Now, today's question is about being pro-choice. Should or can a Christian be pro-choice? Meaning, can a Christian support the killing, the choice to kill, or to terminate or to retain the pregnancy? And you can still be a Christian even though you support the choice to terminate.
Yeah. So it's quite clear now. I think I understand it in a broader way. Pro-choice and the pro-life Christian. So in the first place, we have to understand that God is the one who is the author of life. Doesn't matter how that life comes, but the Lord has provided the life. And the mandate that we have in the Bible and the commandment that we know very well, it is in the Ten Commandments, you shall not kill. You shall not kill. So it shows that the Bible actually promotes the pro-life and not the pro-choice, because the author of life and the source of life, it is God himself who gives life. And so if life comes from God, then no one has the right to take it away. And that is now, in this case, we are talking about the conception, when the child has just been conceived and the life has begun right at conception. And once the child is conceived and there are no life-threatening complications, but it is just that someone has a choice, and not knowing whether for her or him to have a child is a mistake or something. But as long as life is formed, I think the Christian perspective is that we preserve life, we keep life. Because this is the life that comes from God, and no one has the power to take away the life of another person. Now, Mr. Moderator, you also agree with me that even countries in the secular world are aligning to the principle and the perspective, perception of the Bible and of the Christians. This time around, we find that there are no death sentences, but there's just now life imprisonment. I think the world is getting to understand that no one has the right to take away life as we are now. So if the world is going the Bible way to say no one has the right to terminate life or to kill, then we as Christians, we must be promoters of the pro-life and not the pro-choice, where we preserve life, even of the innocent life, more especially of the baby that has been just conceived, has no case, no crime to deserve the death sentence. So surely it will be unfair if, as Christians, we are going to think of promoting our choices above the life, the innocent life.
I'm not quite sure if the pastor has reviewed what the situation is. We have big countries, many, many countries that still have the death penalty. India has the death penalty. China still kills its people. Indonesia, the biggest or the most famous democracy of them all, they've got 24 states. 24 states. Of the 50 states, almost half, shy of one, have the death penalty. Of course, the 25 have no death penalty, and there's one that wavers around. Pakistan, Nigeria, Bangladesh, Ethiopia, Japan, all of them, they do kill people in ceremony. Egypt, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Vietnam, Iran, Thailand, Myanmar, Sudan, Uganda, Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, Malaysia, Saudi Arabia, North Korea, Syria. I can go on and on. Zimbabwe, right here next to us, Zimbabwe. Somalia, Jordan, South Sudan, they all have the death penalty. I'm not quite sure if the pastor wants to review his view on that. I'm told even Lesotho and Botswana, they too have the death penalty. I'm not quite sure if the pastor wants to review his view on that. If we're seeing many of our states here in Africa and the world, democracies the world over, they still do have the death penalty.
Maybe let me come on that one. Let me take it up. I'm saying we may not arrive, all of us together, at the same time. Yes, there are those countries that are still doing the death penalty. But we can also review and see other countries like Zambia and probably where you are coming from, South Africa.
Right. We recently abolished it in 1996.
What about South Africa?
Yeah, South Africa, we recently abolished our death penalty in 1996.
Exactly. So we may not arrive, all of us, at the same time because we may not move at the same pace. But we are looking at that there is this direction where the nations are thinking twice over this issue of killing. And whereas we are coming on board Zambia, I think long ago, where we abolished the issue of killing, death sentence. Now there's just a life sentence. So meaning that we may not all together come as one, but we can see there is a progress. There is a progress that people, as they analyze and get to understand the principle of life and the source of life, that it comes from God. We will still be able to hear that even these countries that you have just mentioned, slowly but sure, they will also arrive to the point and the fact that I think we need to think twice on this constitution. Because every time parliament sits, there are Christians that are there and are able to influence the mind of the people to think in a Bible perspective. So that's why Christians are there. They need to stand in the gap and be able to be the mind of the government. We are taught that Christianity is the mind of governance, is the mind of state, is the mind of the government. So they need to think like Christ or think Christ-like and approach towards life and be able to preserve life that way. But all what we can say now, since we are not in the secular world, we are in the Christian, we are in the spiritual world. We are saying, can the Christian be of the choice to kill or to save life? So since we are talking about a Christian who understands the value of life and knows the source of life, we are saying even in the Bible times, they were not allowed, unless if a mistake has happened, there was a way how the Bible would approach such case where an incident has happened where intentionally or unintentionally life has been lost or have killed someone unintentionally. So there was a way that the Bible would approach a case. But whereas someone intentionally kills life, then the Bible there had a different approach to say, this is wrong because you have killed, so you deserve to be killed. So there was a serious judgment on that one. And so from that perspective, we're able to see that God is there more on saving life and preserving life. So a Christian is not supposed to be on pro-choice where life is constrained, but must see hold life so graciously, even more especially the innocent life of a child that has been conceived.
Does the Bible support pro-life position, Pastor?
Yes, a big yes, actually, because see, this is what we see. You remember even Cain and Abel had a difference. Yeah, Cain had his reason to kill the brother because of jealousy and so forth. According to him, it was justifiable that I should kill my brother. But you know, after killing the brother, God comes to Cain. What have you done? Where is your brother?
No. I'm talking about the idea of the preservation of human life, Pastor. Is that a biblical teaching? I'm going to tell you why I ask. Our Bible teaches us both instances where life was taken and deliberately by God and instructed by God, and where life was protected by God. I am not quite sure which side we are going to ignore and which one we are going to follow. I'll give you an example. God is the one who is recorded to have drowned people and killed them alive. He drowned them alive, the entire army, the Egyptian army. Now, we could argue and say, no, there was a reason. Yes, even capital punishment, even with abortion, there is always a reason. That's example number one, God killing an army that was simply following in instructions. A second example is God flooding the entire world. He killed everybody. Everybody except for Noah and his family. There was no sanctity of life there. Now, that was there. Now, again, we could argue, no, there was a reason, there was sin. Of course, there's always a reason. Pro-choicers say there's a reason. People who are pro-death penalty, they say there's a reason. Well, you don't just kill indiscriminately. You kill because there's a reason. So the argument that there was a reason for God killing, it does not stand the test of time. God instructs human being. Now, with the drowning of the Red Sea and the flood, that was God alone. Even with the killing of the firstborn sons of the Egyptians, that was God alone, was doing it by himself. But then again, God brought in the human hand when God instructed Saul, the first king of the Israelites, to go and kill. Now, there was an instruction of a genocide. God instructing the king to go and smite men and women, even the suckling babies, the infants. Now that's God bringing in the human hand, instructing people to defy what he had instructed in the Decalogue, thou shalt not kill or thou shalt not commit murder. So I'm not quite sure if the Bible does indeed support a pro-life position, because we are seeing God participating himself in the killing, the indiscriminate killing of children and the innocent, and God instructing and bringing in the human hand to participate in the indiscriminate killing of human life, including children or infants. So of the many Bibles that speak on both sides of this debate, how do we ignore these, and why do we say God is pro-life and not pro-choice? It appears from both these versions of God's perspective on life, God is pro-choice, it appears.
Thank you so much. Well, that's a well-elaborated question. We must also be quick to say God is a promoter of life and is a source of life. And he has no intention of destroying life. He has no intention of destroying life. Now, we have to understand, you have mentioned about the genocide or the killing, and the massive killing, and the talk about Sodom and Gomorrah. All of them were wiped and were killed in the inferno. And so you have talked about the Red Sea, of the army that were killed in the sea and swallowed up by the waters of the Red Sea. And should we say God promotes, does not promote life? Now, I want to answer that. When you look at God's judgment, in the first place, we must understand that when God comes to destroy life, he is not destroying life, he's destroying sin. God is not the enemy of life. God is the promoter of life and the source of life. And he cannot be at the same time a promoter and a killer of life. Now, we must be able to show that in those judgments where life was killed, the babies in Egypt were killed, it is actually a sign of the judgment where God begins to hate sin as the greatest enemy. And when human beings align themselves with sin, who is the enemy of God, somehow they will be affected in the process when the judgment of God visits. Now, like the Red Sea people, they were given warning, please don't, God has called these people out of this slavery. Please allow them to go. But you know, Pharaoh, because of his heart being hardened and being stubborn, even when God is speaking nicely and kindly and tenderly, but the Pharaoh actually hardens his heart. At the end of the day, when God visits the scene of stubbornness, Pharaoh is affected, and the scene also affects the other innocent life of the firstborn sons. Okay, that's how sin is, because it also affects even people that are connected to it.
Help us understand what you mean by that, Pastor. When you say sin affects the infants and the suckling babies, how? Explain how the suckling baby who has done no wrong is going to die because the parents have done wrong. Surely if you're going to say it's talking God is destroying sin, the suckling baby, the infants, have not yet committed. They have not taken any decisions to do anything wrong. Why kill the babies if God is against sin? Because babies have not yet committed any sin.
Definitely. Yeah, we may not understand the consequence of sin, because here we are because of the sin of Adam. The sin of Adam has affected the rest of humanity, even those who are not there. So that's how sin is. Let me give you an example of cholera, the disease of cholera. You find that only one person has become careless in handling food, and then it affects even those who are careful to handle the food. So that's how sin is sinful. That's how sinfulness sin is, because it really affects others, even innocent lives. The choices, because of the same thing that we are talking about, promoting the choice. Because I may make a wrong choice, and once I make a wrong choice, my choice will not only affect me alone. The choice that you are making now can also affect your family that is innocent. Say, for instance, in the marriage setup, you choose to be unfaithful to your spouse, and you sleep around having extramarital affairs and so forth, and yet your faithful wife at the end of the day will contract HIV and AIDS. That is the choice that you made and has affected the other person. That is how unfair sin can be.
So let's get back to our conversation then, Pastor. So if we accept that there are circumstances under which killing is acceptable and, dare I say, expected, it appears as though God is pro-choice. Hence the person's question today, can a Christian be pro-choice? Perhaps if we're to follow your argument that there are circumstances under which where the killing of life would be necessary, then I suspect your answer is yes, you can be a Christian and be pro-choice.
I think in the medical term, there are only few exceptions. I think we understand there are few exceptions where life can be terminated, especially in the case of complications. Let's say, for instance, the pregnant woman is in the hospital, and according to the complications, it's either one life goes and the other one remains. Maybe the life of the mother is being threatened. And from there, the decision is arrived at, which one are we going to preserve? Okay, the intention was not really to kill one life. The intention was to save both lives. But because of the complication, it only requires that only one life will survive. And now, if you're going to say, okay, let the life of the child survive and the life of the mother dies, we lose the life of the mother, then who is going to take care of the baby without a mother? And so from there, from the medical point of view, they look at something that is easier to be done and maybe save the life of the mother because of the complication, not because we have made a choice that we kill the baby, but it's because of this dilemma where we have arrived at and we cannot save both lives. The whole idea was to save both lives, but there is a circumstance here that is beyond the control of the doctors, beyond the control of the mother, beyond the control of everyone else. And that is the only option now is just let's save the life of the mother. Those are very slim and few exceptions that probably we can say here and there.
So effectively, yeah, what the pastor is saying, that you are still pro-choice, you just need to choose which one you're going to kill.
No. We are not going to be pro-choice. We are going to be pro-life. The pro-life,
but
the first,
if you're going to take a decision, doctor, that one life is going to die, then you are choosing. You see, there's a choice that you could make also, the one you're not mentioning. If one person,
yes,
if the doctor is saying the mother might die and the child might die, there's a third choice. God might save them both. And I say this very sincerely, that when people take a decision, that's being pro-choice. I'll give you an example of a biblical situation. We have Rachel, who died giving birth to Benjamin. The midwives may very well have seen that this one is not going to survive. This baby is going to kill this mother. But still, they allowed God's choices to be the ones that prevail, not humans' choices. And I say this with so much confidence because the Bible tells us just how much Jacob loved Rachel, such that Jacob loved Benjamin and Joseph more than he loved all the other children by Leah, Rahab, and Bilhah, Leah, Zilpah, and Bilhah. We know this. This is why they even betrayed Joseph at the end of the story. So had he been given the choice to choose, he would have chosen to save the woman because he loved Rachel. But in the Bible, they did not take a choice to save anyone above the other. They did not. They were not pro-choice. They allowed God to do what he wills. And the will of God was for the woman to die. So again, I'm suggesting the posture that says there are circumstances under which you're effectively forced to say there are circumstances under which you're going to choose, which makes you an inadvertent or a closeted pro-choicer.
Thank you so much. This takes us again back to Genesis, my moderator, whereby we can understand this whole concept. In the beginning, God is not the author of death. He is the author of life and intended that man should live eternally. And he has not given up on that plan. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. God is more on the life. Now, this entry of sin and death, it is not in God's agenda. But anyway, there is a death. And life now has got both choices and the decisions that must be made. But we must understand that God's plan for life is for eternity. And so in a situation, a circumstance whereby the one life is saved, the other life perishes, and so forth, we have to understand it from the consequence of sin. But on the side of God, really God wants life and is a promoter of life and the source of life. But whereas you have given an example of Rachel dying, the baby living, and that is now God is the one who allows the situation to happen that way, but not that he really wanted probably Benjamin to lose a mother. Because initially God is there to make sure that the life of the mother and the life of a child both are able to survive. But we are looking at the entrance of sin that has come to interrupt the plan of God and his agenda for life.
Why didn't God save Rachel then, Pastor? Why does God allow Rachel to die if God is pro-life? Because there was no one who we can say intervened. No one killed Rachel. It was God. God had the power to preserve the life of Rachel, but God didn't. God was not pro-life then. He was pro-choice. And he chose to kill Rachel and leave Joseph and Benjamin motherless.
Thank you so much, Mr. Moderator. Otherwise, as I earlier said, God actually would have preserved both lives. And if Rachel dies, we wouldn't say that God has allowed or has caused the death of... of course, he may allow, but he is not the cause. He has not caused the death. We have to understand the great controversy at play here. That as I earlier indicated that in the genesis of time, God has not allowed man to die. Now, if Rachel died, doesn't mean that God has brought this death, but he has just allowed it because of the consequences of sin, that you and I should understand that we are here where we are, troubling, being troubled by death, having this confusion, that even the debate that we are having now, is because of the entrance of sin. Where the situation is conducive, as in Eden, we would expect that Rachel and the baby are able to survive. But God has not given up on his plan that both the mother and the child should live, because once he has finished to deal with his sin and the source of it, then we must be able to talk about life through and through, and life that will never end. That is God's plan. That's God's plan.
All right. I hear you, Pastor. Thank you very much for your time. We have tomorrow once again, yes, one more day between you and I. Really appreciate your insights. Have a wonderful day, Brother Pastor.
Thank you so much. We can't exhaust for tomorrow, so we have to spare tomorrow.
Absolutely,
for tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for those of you that are following us. We have had a good time. And personally, I have been inspired and have enjoyed this presentation. I hope you are also following and you are enjoying our presentation. May God bless you. Thank you.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.